life gets messy. Spills, stains, and kid chaos. But with Anabe, cleaning up is easy. Our sofas are fully machine washable, inside and out, so you never have to stress about messes again. Made with liquid and stain-resistant fabrics, that means fewer stains and more peace of mind. Designed for real life, our sofas feature changeable fabric covers, allowing you to refresh your style anytime. Need flexibility? Our modular design lets you rearrange your sofa effortlessly. Perfect for cozy apartments or spacious homes. Plus, they're earth-friendly and built to last. That's why over 200,000 happy customers have made the switch. Get early access to Black Friday pricing right now. Sofas start at just $699. Visit washablesofas.com now and bring home a sofa made for life. That's washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
This is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
Welcoming Malcolm Honlein, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations. We go immediately to Port Gaza. The first shipments have now reached the beaches in Gaza. The Gaza Strip is 25 miles from head to toe, about seven and a half miles wide. The beach is gorgeous all along the way. It's the Mediterranean beach, just like Greece. Right now, however, thousands, tens of thousands of people are looking to the sea for aid coming in. This is in anticipation of the larger floating dock to be built by the U.S. and Israel. But there are flat-bottom boats or shallow draft boats that can reach much to the beach, and there are waiting Gazans looking for the aid to come through if it is approved and inspected. Malcolm, a very good evening to you. The photographs show the early ships arriving from Cyprus, from the rest of the Mediterranean. They need a lot every day now. What is your expectation? Will this Port Gaza, it's a way they talk about it, Port Gaza, will it come under attack or will the Hamas killers leave it alone? Good evening to you.
Good evening. Well, they are not going to leave it alone because both Hamas and Qatar are very upset about it because it removed the dependency on the Qatar-Hamas connection to bring aid in, aid which they controlled. And a story that is not amply reflected, that the majority of the aid that comes in, about 70%, was being taken by Hamas. And some of the people showed, some of the media showed that the markets had the aid being sold by agents of Hamas. They sell it to the people in the markets, and they in turn sell it to the people. So it wasn't a shortage of food. It was the inaccessibility because Hamas would steal it. And that's why you saw those armed guys on top of the trucks and why Israel tried to intercede to make sure that the food would actually be delivered to the people. The Israel shows that more than 14,000 trucks of aid entered Gaza in the 5 months since the conflict started, which would be more than enough to keep hunger at bay. And these images of famine, which they keep telling us every week, not image reports of imminent famine, are wrongly being portrayed to the American people and to people around the world as Israel denying the access to the aid, which is absolutely not the case. The aid is coming in. People are getting it now from in northern Gaza directly from the pier. A huge shipment from the World Kitchens came. Israel said that they would allow much more through that route. Israel actually proposed this solution a long time ago, but it wasn't accepted. The port cuts off the control of Qatar and Hamas of the supplies that went through the Rafah crossing until now and stolen, as I indicated. And so... you're seeing that this is providing an alternative. There is plenty of food in Gaza itself. We see it in the pictures of the markets and other portrayals by some of the reporters who are honest enough to tell what's really happening on the ground. So Port Hamas, or Port of Hope, as some call it, seems to be functioning. And again, now for the first time, the 70% that was disappearing to Hamas is really getting a much greater proportion, at least, is gaining to the people.
Gaza. We have reports in all directions about the conversation between the president and the prime minister, but this is the important part. Israel to press on with Rafah assault, says Mr. Netanyahu. The planned offensive on Rafah ratchets up tension with Biden, says NBC News. Biden, Israel's Netanyahu discuss Rafah. Rafah is a village, the remains of a village, at the south of the Gaza Strip. It's divided in nearly in half by the international border between Egypt and Gaza, between Egypt and Israel. The crowded parts of Rafah are a tent city. The question is how to deal with the battalions of Hamas killers who are underneath the tented parts or underneath the Rafah crossing. Israel has said repeatedly there will be a plan. It will have humanitarian corridors, and this is going to be a tough fight to go underground and deal with several thousand. There's estimates as many as 6,000 or 7,000 Hamas fighters who are up against no exit, no access to exit. They're not going to be able to escape, so they're either going to surrender or they're going to perish. Malcolm, what can we say right now about the plan to provide humanitarian corridors? And I think at one point the metaphor of humanitarian oasis was being used. Is it in place?
So you've accurately described the situation in Rafah. There can be no end to this war if Israel doesn't have the opportunity to go in a well-defined way that gives the exit route to the citizens who are there. And again, the supply of food that we talked about gives them an option of going to the north where food will be available. The Rafah itself is the hiding ground for four battalions, not entire battalions, but a very large presence of the leadership and key operatives of Hamas. And were they to be allowed to remain, they would reemerge. This is the fifth war that Hamas has launched against Israel. And each time they emerge stronger, because if they can come out just to wave the flag, they don't care about the loss. It's well believed that they actually wanted October 7th to yield the essential response that Israel had to do after the outrages, and that they gave the orders for all the sexual violence and raping and murder and mayhem that they caused, because they wanted an oversized Israeli reaction, because they felt that this would unify the people behind them and the Arab world behind them. Whereas the Arab world knows that if Hamas emerges in any way victorious from this conflict, they will all pay the price as well. Israel has no choice but to fight on and to remove Hamas's capabilities once and for all, and to allow the Palestinians then to create some entity that will govern them and enable them to run their own lives. The situation at the Rafah crossing has been amply demonstrated to people, but success, a ceasefire, will only come about if there's a meaningful Rafah offensive, and the Hamas is countering the fact that U.S. will keep Israel out of Rafah, enabling them to walk away with at least a strategic victory. And without the threat of this operation, they have no reason to agree to a ceasefire. There can be no true lasting ceasefire if Hamas can return to power. So what we're seeing is that the essential importance of this action has been really colored. The United States has not made it a red line. They did not say Israel shouldn't go into Rafah. They understand that that is critical to the ultimate outcome. They're saying that there has to be a proper plan for the civilian population to be safely evacuated, and that is included in what Israel is proposing.
CENTCOM. Commenting on the Houthis, who are harassing and shooting at and just generally wrecking the global economy into the Red Sea. Right now, my understanding is that the Houthis have continued the offensive. Is that accurate, Malcolm?
That is accurate. There were several shoot downs. I think an Italian ship took down two Houthi rockets. The United States and Great Britain and others have been attacking, trying to preempt the attacks by hitting the launchers on the ground. But unlike the United States' actions that the head of Central Command, General Michael Carrilla, told the Senate Armed Forces Committee this past week, that the strikes on the Iranian proxy groups in Iraq and Syria have deterred them from firing at American troops for more than a month. That is not the case regarding the actions against Hamas, against Hezbollah, the Houthis, who continue to be armed by Iran, who continue to fire at ships in the Red Sea. They hit one last week. There were the week before, several people were killed, people on the ships. And it's near the daily strikes, often multiple strikes in a single day, that the Houthis have taken. And most of the responses are defensive in nature, taking out drones or missiles before they can be launched. So the guerrilla described the situation quite accurately and, you know, against, in essence, was calling for far greater action against the Houthis to stop this barrage, which is having, beyond the military, and having the severe economic impact on countries that can no longer go through the Red Sea.
We move on to the United Nations. The ambassador from Israel speaking to the United Nations about Hamas. What did he say, Malcolm?
This was the foreign minister who was visiting and spoke to the Security Council and issued a very strong protest about the crimes against humanity and saying the only crimes, not as it being portrayed even by American media, which blithely uses these terms, this very serious accusation, the only one guilty of that is Hamas. Their murderers are proud of abusing and the rapes and everything that they have done. They took pictures, they broadcast it. And the United Nations has been silent about the actions of Hamas. Over the 5 months, United Nations met 41 times and never condemned or denounced the brutal crimes of Hamas on October 7th. This is really a statement about where the United Nations is out. Hamas is clearly the one responsible for the crimes against humanity. They breached the borders. They carried out all of these terrible attacks. And I think the foreign minister's message of demanding that the Security Council use pressure and act against Hamas and have sanctions and get the release of all of the hostages that are still being held. Their acts are far more severe than the acts of terror perpetrated by Al-Qaeda or ISIS or other terrorist organizations that were sanctioned by the UN.
IAEA meeting to chastise, worry about a proliferation. But what about Iran?
So it's very sad to report that contrary to our hopes and expectations and the things we discussed, the Western powers did not issue new resolutions blasting Tehran, largely because they want to avoid an escalation, trying to contain the fallout from the ongoing war in Gaza, I guess. But according to some other sources, the delegates issued warnings about the trajectory of Iran's nuclear program. And I pointed out that it was the Russian delegate of all people who pointed to the 84% enrichment in far violation, far exceeding the limits that they were supposed to have under the nuclear deal. We see that their nuclear program and ballistic missile program have been advanced a great deal during this time. The IAEA, according to its director, said, have lost the continuity of knowledge, he said, about both production and the stockpiling of strips of centrifuges or the heavy water or the uranium or concentrate, which means that Iran is being able to move ahead unchecked by the IAEA at this point.
Border security in Europe and in the United States. According to reports, there is a member of Hezbollah detained in El Paso, Texas, who has admitted or is regarded as somebody who is ready to build a bomb. Is this also true in Europe, Malcolm?
Well, first of all, the case of Mr. Abadi, 22 years old, caught by the Border Patrol in March, has admitted that he's from Lebanon, a member of Hezbollah, and was headed to New York. And when he was asked what he was going to do there, he said, I'm going to try to make a bomb. And this is in Border Patrol documents that were pretty widely reported. Now we also find out that in a new terror threat is emerging in Europe, where two separate groups of Afghan and Syrian refugees who carried arms and ammunition, including Kalashnikov assault rifles, were found in Austria and in Bosnia. Two separate groups that were found, and they had pictures of Jewish and Israeli targets in Europe on some of their mobile phones. The terror threat is coming from new sources, including Iran and its proxies, and especially Hezbollah and Hamas. German police launched raids across the country several months ago, targeting Hamas and its affiliates. And now German and Dutch police arrested four people for receiving orders from Hamas to open a cache of weapons, which had been hidden in Europe, to attack Jewish targets in Berlin and elsewhere in Western Europe. They're saying that they buried, the German officials are saying that weapons were buried underground in Europe years ago. And these longstanding Hamas members who were involved won't tell the source and where they are or where they're hidden. And we know that they've been doing fundraising and other things for a long time there to support the work of Hamas. So we had an additional story coming at the same time where Italian police said they arrested three Palestinians in Laquita, northeast of Rome, who had set up a cell linked to Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade and planning to attack an unspecified country. They're considered a terrorist group by Israel, the EU, the U.S., etc. And one of the three men is noted to be wanted by Israel for terrorist acts.
Malcolm Honlein, The Dusty One, is next. I'm John Batten.
We track so many things in our lives. Trending podcasts, playlists, even your favorite artist's next album release. It's time for an easy way to track your glucose. Meet Stelo, the powerful glucose biosensor available without a prescription that tracks glucose 24/7 to reveal how food, exercise, and even sleep can affect your glucose, helping you become a healthier you. Join the personal health revolution today at Stelo.com.
Hey, it's me, your heart. Mind if I pick the next song? Listen, even though we're eating better, people who've had one heart attack are at higher risk of another. But Repatha Evolocumab plus a statin lowers LDL-C, our bad cholesterol, and our heart attack risk. So let's talk to our doctor about Repatha.
Do not take Repatha if you're allergic to it. Serious allergic reactions can occur. Get medical help right away if you have trouble breathing or swallowing, swelling of the face, lips, tongue, throat, or arms. Common side effects include runny nose, sore throat, common cold symptoms, flu or flu-like symptoms, back pain, high blood sugar, and redness, pain, or bruising at the injection site. View the important safety information in our banner. Listen to your heart. Ask your doctor about Repatha.
Love the night? Reach for Zen After Dark, a limited cocktail-inspired series for those who get up when the sun goes down. Try Zen's Mojito, Spiced Cider, and Espresso Martini nicotine pouches. Find them at select retailers, available while supplies last. Zen After Dark. Bring on the night. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.